Welcome to Season 2 of Untold, the story of the Jamaican community in Canada, a podcast produced by journalism students at Mount Royal University as part of the Community Podcast Initiative. This series explores the stories of Jamaicans who learn more about their culture and heritage and their contributions to Canadian society.
We'll talk to people about what it was like to leave Jamaica and how they've adjusted to life here, their successes, and the challenges they faced. We'll hear how they've shared their culture and knowledge with Canadians through food, the arts, business, spirituality, healthcare, and education. Many of their stories have been overlooked and untold.
I'm Nandini Sahai.
And I'm Jenna Abara.
In this episode, we speak with Bishop Joseph Hackett of the Berean Church of God International, a man who left behind a great life in Jamaica as a pastor and a school principal, endured culture shock and hardship in Canada, and spent years rebuilding his life here.
He discusses the challenges of immigration, such as arriving in Canada on a work permit, only to have it revoked a few hours later. He ended up working 12-hour night shifts in a factory, despite being a well-respected educator in Jamaica.
But his story is not only about hardships and challenges. Bishop Hackett elaborates on how Calgary's Jamaican community helped him feel welcomed through cultural expressions such as food, spirituality, and celebrations.
Tell us a bit about what life was like for you in Jamaica.
Well, in Jamaica, I was a school principal. I also pastored 2 churches, so I had two occupations, you might say. One a teacher, one a minister of religion. And I was a minister of religion for 3 years before I came here. I taught for 14 years before I came here. And that was about it. Because I left there with my family in 1994, landed in Toronto. That was July 2, and we came to Calgary July 3 because we came here to pastor a church.
How was it like immigrating from Jamaica to Canada?
Well, it was a big decision to make. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know what life was like in Canada. My wife came the year before, 1993, just for about a week, and because she had a sister living here. And then I came. Life in Jamaica was... it was pretty good, beautiful. We lived in a good place. We had good jobs. I was a teacher. My wife was a teacher, and then she started to sell life insurance. So we were not struggling for money. Life was fairly good. We had a motor car, you know. We got by. Life was beautiful in Jamaica. We could do so much, you know. We went to the beach pretty often. We had friends over. We celebrate lots of stuff. We had fun. It's tropics, so it's 12 months per year. It's summer, and it's just beautiful sunshine. Right now we're having a horrible hurricane, Melissa, destroying the island. Catastrophic storm, we're told, Category 5. We experienced one hurricane when we lived in Jamaica, and that's some 30 odd years. So, yeah, we didn't get a lot of storms. They passed by, and the worst one we got was Gilbert. We were there for Gilbert, and then we hadn't experienced any more until we hear of this horrible Melissa passing through.
How did you find the Jamaican community here? Was it easy to connect?
Yeah, pretty much, because we came to pastor a church, this body. Most of the people were Jamaicans, not all of them. Some are from Nigeria, some from other parts of Canada, other parts of the Caribbean. The congregation was mostly Caribbean people. So yeah, all our congregants, most of our congregants were Canadian, were Caribbean people. And other ethnic groups joined us during the process. As the church grew. So, it has grown quite a bit.
You mentioned attending a few JCAA events. Mm-hmm. How did they help you stay connected to the community?
Well, from we came here, there were members of our church that were connected to this association. So it wasn't a challenge at all. We are invited to functions they're having, we attend. We host every year the Jamaican Canadian Association program for the independence of Jamaica. We celebrate the independence of Jamaica every year, so we host that function every year. It's about August. So the first Sunday in August is usually the Sunday that is used for that. And they honored us by giving us this little plaque to show that we are participants in that association. And my wife and I, it was in August actually, end of August, that we received an award for our participation in this function and in this association all of these years. It's 30 odd years we've been participating, yeah.
That's wonderful. And are there any other events you'd like to see more from them?
Well, they have some good programs going. They award scholarships to some people, young people, and they are deeply involved in the Jamaican community, and not just the Jamaican community, but community at large. You know, they're doing a good work. So I don't know that there's much more that they can do. You know, I'm pretty satisfied with what I see coming from them. Yeah, there's a deep involvement, and they help people who are in need. That's one of the main things that they do. They help people who are in need, and that's, I believe, is a very good thing to do.
That's wonderful. And what other challenges did you face coming here?
Like I said earlier, we weren't sure what we're going into. We had good jobs. We were pretty much doing good. And coming here was a big decision to make, not knowing where you're going. You know, it's like trying to navigate something that you don't know about. But we came, and coming here, we experienced a culture shock, you might say, because life for us was pretty good in Jamaica. I woke up in the mornings and go to work, go to school. School starts about 8:30. We're done by 3 o'clock, something like that. And coming here, we were here for 2 years. The government told us that we couldn't work, we couldn't do any work. Neither my wife nor myself, outside of church. So we were at home for 2 years. Or we were just volunteering in doing community work because we could not work. When we came to Toronto, they took our work permit from us because we got work permits in Jamaica before we came because we wanted to be sure that coming here, we would get jobs. When we came to Toronto, the immigration folks took our work permit. You know, they canceled it. So they said to me, you can only work in the church. I said to my wife, she can only work in the church. She can't do anything else. So we were relegated to that position for 2 years. After 2 years, then we became landed immigrants, and we were able to get to work. You know, we got our SIN. We were able to work. But the biggest part of it was that I could not teach. Because they told me I had to go back to school for 3 years. We had two children that we had to care for, you know, find food and whatever for them. So we were both put in a position that we had to work and to find a job, because the church could not pay me a full salary that I could be full time. So I had to do manual work to subsidize that. And since I wasn't able to teach, the quickest thing for me was to get a job that was manual, which kind of brought you down from maybe the upper echelon of society to way down the bottom. But it's kind of about survival and providing for a family. So I worked in a factory, what you would call it now, it's in the metal industry, and I worked there for a number of years, quite a while. And I think it was about 2016 or something like that, that the church put me on full-time work, so I work full-time in the church now. So I don't have to worry about that. So it was quite a shock. My first job was, it started at 7 o'clock in the evening and ended at 7 o'clock in the morning. It was 12 hours. I've never done anything like that. I was always teaching. So that was quite a shock for me. It really was. I watched the sun rise, I watched the sun set, and I did it for 3 months. I decided I can't do this anymore. It's just not for me.
Now, that sounds really, like, stressful coming here.
It was. You thought it would have been easy, considering that this is, I think it's called a first world country. Jamaica is regarded as they don't say third world anymore, it's a developing country. But I was doing better there than here. I didn't come here because of the want of a job or want of living a better life, because we were doing good in Jamaica. So that was pretty shocking for us to be put in a position where you had to do manual work, put on coveralls and steel-toe boots and that kind of stuff. It's an experience. Life is full of experience, and everything that you do in life is a part of your education, right? Life itself is a school.
You're right about that. And you mentioned, when you moved here in 1994, mm-hmm. you faced racism, you and your family. Mm-hmm. What was like an experience that really stuck with you?
Well, I can speak of one in my workplace, all right? A lot of employees in my workplace didn't speak English properly. Different ethnic groups, people have in their minds different, prejudices that they might cultivate there, and it stays there, and it's not easily eradicated. Sometimes you have to stand up for yourself, because within my workplace, there are all kinds of ethnic groups. I was favored to be a lead person in my department, but the foreman was of a different ethnic group from me, and he favored another guy. And when he was promoted, a whole group of us were in a meeting when he was promoted, and almost the entire shop shouted my name when the guy's name was called, because from what I see, I should have been a person. So I continued to do the work that I do. And one morning the foreman came in, because we had to write up some stuff before we set off to our workstations to do the work we were going to do for the day. And I said to him, I'm not going to do this anymore. All right? I'm not going to write this thing that I have to write every day. This guy you have chosen to be your lead hand, he's going to do it. I'm not going to do the work and he gets the pay. That was it. I stopped. But he didn't fire me. And I was not afraid to talk to him like that. And that was it. I noticed also that if I'm to get a raise, I had to fight for it. But that's my nature. I passed him. I went to the owner of the company. I told him what I thought. I said, I know I'm doing good. Why am I getting this for an increase when I know that some other people getting X amount? But this, because this guy, this foreman, and who he was, that's why he was doing these things. So I pretty much stood up for myself every time. The company was bought by another company. And then in this new company, which was a new building that they had, big, expansive, the people who work in a certain area, the area that I worked in, because we worked in a shop, in the mornings, we have to walk in mud and dirty water to come to the shop. And when we were going home in the evenings, we all walked through the same mud to get to our cars. And they had a huge paved parking lot at one side of the building. And I said to, we were having a meeting one morning, and I asked a question, why should we who are working in a shop have to step over mud and dirt to get in here and to get back to our cars with all this mud on our feet? And we have this huge parking area that nobody is using. Why is that? The next thing I know, it was from the same day, they started to put some changes in the fence to make a door so that we can use that area. And we started using that area since then, and I think we're still using it right now. So that's what I do. If I see something I don't think is right, I speak up for it. I don't care what the consequences are. That's the truth. The truth is the truth. The truth stands on its own 2 feet, right?
No, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's really wonderful.
How did these moments affect your sense of belonging in Canada?
I don't know if it's a matter of, but I knew I belonged in Canada. I know who I am. That's the most important thing. I know who I am, and nobody can denigrate me to a lower position that I think. Nobody can get me to think less of myself than who I am, you know. So, yeah, I stood up. I'm proud that I spoke up in those moments when it was necessary to speak, because I believe everybody should have some fight in themselves to stand up for yourself. And I particularly don't like to see the weak people suffer because the stronger one is opposing them. So yeah, I knew who I was, and that's why I spoke the way I did. And I'm quite comfortable being here. Yeah, we are affected with racism, but I guess it's a part of life. You're not going to get away from it. You know, people are gravitated towards people of their same ethnic group usually. It doesn't have to be, but that's how it is.
Definitely. And what's racism like in Calgary today?
It may be a little bit different from when we came here. When we came here, we didn't see many people of our ethnic group. When I saw one in the store, I would be very happy to see them. I felt a brotherly spirit when I saw one. It might not be so much today. I don't know. I haven't seen it much. But I know still when we go to a store, you know, somebody, they're followed. I don't know if because of our ethnic group or not, but we're followed around in subtle ways. They pretend to be fixing stuff on the store shelves and stuff. And you can easily say to somebody, why are you following me? Because it is still there, you know, but maybe not as much as when we came. Sometimes you just ignore it, let it be.
Definitely. What encouraged you to become a bishop? What does that mean to you?
I became a Christian. I grew up in a Christian home. My parents are Christians. I became a Christian, committed Christian, at the age of 17. And from then, I have a passion to see people get saved. So I grew up in the church. I stayed in the church. I've been promoted in these different levels. I went to Bible college, of course. I came to these different levels, and I think the more I grow in the church, the more I have to offer. And I want to keep offering to the community in terms of their spirituality. I love to help people. I love to see people overcome obstacles in their lives. I love to see people on their feet and moving forward. I love to see people redeemed, whether they're on drugs or whatever, to help them to get off of these situations and get on their feet and move forward. Because Jesus is about redemption. So it doesn't matter how low a man gets, he can get up off his feet and move forward. So that gives me a drive inside of me, a passion to help people to see them move forward.
Wow. What are some other challenges that Jamaican immigrants commonly face when they come to Canada? For example, culture shock, employment issues, loneliness.
Well, some of the things, one is that people think we don't speak English. English is our first language. We actually speak better English than Canadians because we speak the Queen's English. We were a British colony, and some of the expressions they use here and the tenses and stuff, I was surprised sometimes to hear some of the sentences being read on television in newscast. I said, this is kind of strange, you know. But we speak English. And yeah, I believe education is one of the main things that should move people forward. If you're not educated, you can remain at the bottom of the social ladder. Education advances people. So I would encourage people who are having challenges, whether challenges to work, because your qualifications determine what kind of work you can do. So I would encourage young and old, as long as you can go to school, get qualified for the job that you want to do. So, and that is my first and foremost thing. If you can get help to get off your feet when you just start, because sometimes it's a struggle, you know, find a group of people, whether it's a church or a community association, be part of it, and people can help you to move forward.
And how do you keep Jamaican customs active within your church community?
That's interesting. We still have cultural events. My wife writes plays sometimes. Culinary arts, we still do Jamaican cooking. We tell Jamaican tales. We do Jamaican poems. We sing Jamaican songs. We have picnics sometimes. And yeah, we can't lose our culture because it's part of us. It's in us. So we keep it going in these ways. And we pass it on to our children to make sure that they know their culture. So whether it's cooking, religion, whatever, we make sure they are involved in it.
That's wonderful. What are some of the similarities or differences you've noticed regarding church life in Jamaica and here in Canada?
We love to sing. So even though we have a structured service like any other church here, our services might be a little longer because if we are enjoying a song, we'll sing it longer. We sing it 10 minutes longer. People in our churches, they will get up out of their seats, they will dance, they'll walk across the floor and they will dance and clap their hands, sing and shout. In Canadian churches, it's more conservative. They stand one place and they might just sing, they might not even clap their hands, but some do. I think the younger people do that much now. Preachers tend to preach, they'll have their notes, but they'll move away from the notes and preach from their heart a lot of times, you know. It's not so in most of the Canadian churches, they tend to stick to the script. The sermons in our churches usually last 45 minutes, maybe 1 hour, maybe 1.5 hour. I don't know if has ever gone up to 2 hours, but they're pretty long sometimes. You'll find that we might say our church will be done at, say, 12 o'clock, but 12:30, church is still going on. But that's just how it is. We worship from our heart. We don't stick to script.
That's wonderful. I love that.
Another thing is that at Christmas time, we don't usually do Christmas Eve services, but I noticed that the Canadian churches tend to do that. So sometimes we attend some of them, but we do have Christmas Day services.
That's nice. And what would you like to say as a message of hope to immigrants who feel lost or disconnected from their home?
If you feel lost, I mean, man is a social creature and we need one another. If you feel lost, if you feel lonely, don't stay at home and mope. Get connected to a group. And it doesn't have to be your own ethnic group. Get connected to a community association. Get involved in work. And it will help to give you some self-worth. It does help. It enhances one's self-esteem. So it is good to be involved, but we were never meant to be alone. If you get involved, somebody, and share your story, because every man has a story, share your story. Somebody maybe, you know, be able to help you in your situation to get out of your dark situation. Loneliness can lead to depression, and depression can lead to God knows what, you know. So get involved. Yeah.
And what do you say, like, getting involved with the Berean Church?
Get involved with the Berean Church. You can come to church. We have young people here. We have old people. We do a lot. We are fun to be around. We laugh. When church is dismissed here, sometimes we're here half an hour or more talking. You know, we meet here. We don't just come to worship. We come to socialize with one another. So yeah, come, be part of it. You know, you'll enjoy it, you'll have fun. You can learn to play some instrument, maybe guitar, drums, whatever. We allow that too. We allow the kids to go and play with these things. That's how you're going to learn. Our musicians don't read notes, but they're the best. Yep. You play by ear. You'll hear, you listen, and you just play. My son started playing the drums when he was 5. Nobody taught him. We took him to a drumming school in the southeast somewhere. When he was about 6 at the time. And the teacher said, I don't know what to teach him. Because he just teach basic stuff. He said, I don't know what to teach him. And his feet couldn't even reach the drum pedals, you know. But it was in him. If I tell you this, we took him to a concert one night when he was a baby. He was not yet 2 years old. He was probably 1.5. And I was close to the back. It was a live concert, drums, guitars, everything up there. And he just wanted to look. I had to stand with him. If I sat with him, he cried. And I had to stand with him the whole time and let him see what's going on. When he came home, he took the pots from out of the cupboard and he started to beat them with sticks and pencils in the house. He started to beat the pots. I said, oh my goodness. You know, it just got into him somehow. And from then, he has not stopped. So he is our drummer today, our main drummer.
That's Bishop Joseph Hackett of the Berean Church of God International sharing his journey from Jamaica to Calgary, a story of faith, culture, struggle, and community. Thanks for listening to Untold, the story of the Jamaican community in Canada, a podcast produced by journalism students at Mount Royal University in Calgary as part of the Community Podcast Initiative. I'm Nandini Sahai.
And I'm Jana Abara. This series was produced on the lands of the Nitsitapi, Blackfoot, Iarhe Nakuda, Sutina, and Métis peoples. We recognize the stewards of these lands and the knowledge they bring to our understanding of authentic storytelling.
Special thanks to Dr. Marva Ferguson and the Jamaican Community Association Alberta, who have been so supportive in helping us put this series together. Be sure to subscribe to hear the latest episodes and discover new podcasts from the Community Podcast Initiative on our website, thepodcaststudio.ca.